All right, we're getting ready to go. Thank you for coming back. And thank you to, first of all, well, I think I'll wait and say this in front of everybody. I want to acknowledge Ginny Troutwine. Ginny comes early every time, every Thursday morning, and sets up the hospitality, and then she sits right here. We really appreciate Ginny's efforts, and thank you, Ginny, back there. And thank you to all whose last name starts between A and G for the refreshments today. And those people not only brought wonderful things, but I want to ask them if they would stay and help Ginny out for a little bit afterwards so we can put the hospitality room back the way we found it. So if you brought some treats today, could you help Ginny out afterwards? And then next week, if your last name begins in the middle of the alphabet, between H and N, H and N, if your name begins between H and N, please bring something just like you saw today. Bob talked about the September session. We're starting a next 10-week session, and it starts as September 7th, and it ends on November 9th, and we're doing Richard Rohr's latest book, and it's called The Divine Dance. And we have heard that Richard himself thinks this is the best one he's ever written. And he's written a lot of books. So we're in the process of getting the speakers and actually deciding what it is that we need to charge for this, because this is costing something. We want to get the best speakers we can, and some of them are costing a little bit more than we have. So we're going to tell you what the cost will be for the next session. And you can sign up on the May 25th, the last session. We can begin taking to sign-ups for the September session. All right. Anybody else have anything to say? Welcome to all of you who are new, and we hope that you will stick with us for the September session. It's really going to be a good one. All right, Dave, thanks.
Thanks, Judy. Tom would like to share something about the song Over the Rainbow. So we'll start that way.
Thanks, Dave. I'm sure we all know and love Over the Rainbow. What I've been doing in my work with therapeutic music in retirement homes is delving into the history and background and the deeper meaning of some of these songs. And let me just give you a quick overview of what I think of Over the Rainbow now, having studied it for a few years, sung it, and done all that. The song itself is by a composer named Harold Arlen, who is, as I understand, a Jewish composer. And Yip Harburg was the lyricist. And they created this song for The Wizard of Oz in 1939. That was a fateful year for the Jewish people. It was the beginning of World War II in earnest. And so if you look at the lyrics of Over the Rainbow, you can see this song as not just a dreamlike kind of evocation of what it's like to go from Kansas to there and back, but it's also just listen to this and think of yourself as Jewish and listen to this. Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby. Think Israel. Okay. Somewhere over the rainbow, skies are blue, and the dreams that you dare to dream really do come true, which is getting out of Germany, right? Someday I'll look upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me, where troubles melt like lemon drops away above the chimney tops. When I hear clouds and chimney tops, I hear crematoria in that song. That's where that's where you'll find me. And then in the last verse, somewhere over the rainbow, silvers fly. Yeah. And I hear Israeli Air Force. Somewhere over the rainbow, bluebirds fly. Birds fly over the rainbow. Why can't I? Which is to say, why can't I emigrate and get out of this terrible situation. So it's possible that you can read or hear that song as a kind of a desperation plea. I just wanted to share that with you because we're talking deep today, so why not? Yeah.
Thank you, Tom. It's very fascinating. So, let's take a quick look at what we mean by dark side. We've all heard that expression. And sometimes it refers to evil, as in talking about the war and the Holocaust. So that would be an example of how the dark side overcame temporarily and evil things happened. Dark side also refers to a kind of painful correction. For instance, an earthquake shifts the continental plates, helps the planet adjust itself, but it all happens in a way that's painful. Yet we can't call it evil, nor would we call a hurricane evil or a volcano eruption evil. We see them all as part of the unfolding style of nature that is at work doing something that ultimately contributes to the evolution of the planet. So the dark side of each archetype has something to offer, and since every archetype is in us, we also have a dark side. Sometimes this dark side goes toward evil choices, and sometimes this dark side just naturally looks for painful corrections, or they might also be called initiations. Like an initiation is associated with pain because you have to go through a certain initiation to join a group or fraternity or sorority, and pain somehow is part of the process of upgrading your identity to become part of a group that has higher goals than you yourself might have individually. That's the concept of initiation. So when we say the dark side of the feminine in this instance being about nature, we're referring to the corrective style that is symbolized by the force of nature and the painful correction of the arrogant ego, which gets its comeuppance from this same feminine energy. So it would be a rare man who, in the course of life, has not gotten some kind of comeuppance from a relationship to a woman. Whether it's mother or wife or friend or whoever, or boss. But some female has corrected deflated the inflated ego, shall we say. That would be an example of a visit from the divine feminine. Now, unfortunately, the image that was passed down to us of Mary doesn't have this dark side. So she's a damaged or wounded archetype. She doesn't give you the full picture. So that's why you hear more and more about Mary Magdalene, who brings in the erotic, who brings in the visit to the sinful side, let's say. because that image of Mary is not enough. So it will have to be balanced, since the psyche is always looking for a balance of the opposites. It will have to be balanced by another image, and Mary Magdalene is a good example of it. So in our chapter, which is called What is the Divine Feminine? We started on page 22. And on 23, I talk about the energies of light and dark. And I mentioned Mary Magdalene has become an archetype for New Age spirituality. She represents the passionate side of the feminine. Our idealized images of Mary lack that shadow, mysterious, earthy, not evil look. And that would be what you would need to have the fully divine feminine image. So the exalted image of Mary emerges from the masculine version of what the female should be like, rather than the actual version of the feminine, which includes a wild, destructive side so visible in Mother Nature. And there's some connection between her having that dark side and her being the midwife to the resurrection. And I have this wonderful quote in here by Teilhard de Chardin from The Heart of Matter. My God, I deliver myself up with utter abandon to those fearful forces of dissolution, breakdown, which I blindly believe will this day cause my narrow ego to be replaced by your divine presence. Isn't that beautiful? And that's the image of St. Meinrad. When he was attacked by the evil demons, he lay flat on the ground. I'm going to trust Mother Nature to hold me through this, rather than I'm going to try to kill them off. So somehow we would turn to Mary to help us reduce our ego. If you follow what I mean. And this has something to do with the transition from death to life. Because whenever there's an initiation, it leads to a new way of living. So you'd have to ask yourself, well, am I open to a new way of living? Is there something in me that is willing to go there? On the bottom of 26, I say, when Mary stays at the cross, she is the sentinel of our spiritual purpose to face evil nonviolently. The image of the women at the foot of the cross, Mary Magdalene, Mary, the other Mary, is a way of affirming the role of the feminine in initiating our egos into that costly but courageously redemptive calling. And so when you pray to the dark side of Mary, it's for the strength to bear difficulties, not to delete them. You're asking her help as you go through things. You're trusting that the givens of your life, the particular ills, painful experiences, betrayals, disappointments, losses, all the things you go through in life that are so difficult to weather, you can turn to her to help you go through them, because in her dark side she understands them. So you're not asking, don't let these things happen. You're asking, give me your strength to stand next to the cross rather than run away from it. I wanted to share this quotation from Tom Hayden. It's on the bottom of page 30. Just as the archetype of the divine feminine is within us, as we've been saying, so is nature within us. So think of all of nature, which includes the beautiful island of Kauai and the empty desert in Arabia, that I have all of that in me. So sometimes I will feel like I'm in a desert. Sometimes I will feel like I'm in a garden. All of those are inside me, and all of that has to become okay with me. And then Tom Hayden's statement, we need to experience nature and the universe as within ourselves, not as external scenery we view outside the window of real life. This world is not scenery. It's a picture of our fate. I'm going to have some desert experiences, and I'm going to have some garden experiences. And the divine feminine, Mother Nature, can walk me through that. On the top of 31, the feminine nature religious tradition in medieval times became associated with witchcraft and was a target of fierce suppression by the patriarchal authorities. Today, we're deeply conscious of the role of nature in bringing us closer to God, the importance of respect for the planet as a spiritual commitment, and we want a spirituality with ecological awareness. So we've come a long way from that medieval style, but let's face it, our society still does not honor the feminine. And we see the oppression of women all over the world and realize that the feminine still isn't trusted as a force to be turned to and to be looked to for support. Former President Jimmy Carter was a member of the Baptist Convention, and he was on one of their main committees, and he resigned from the committee, and he wrote a beautiful explanation of why he was resigning, and it said, "You do not respect the feminine, and when you do not allow the feminine to have full, equal power as you do with the masculine, you make it easy for people all over the world to oppress women. Because when you don't stand up for women, other people say, well, look, the church doesn't stand up for women, so I guess they really are second-class citizens." So he resigned based on that. Isn't that a wonderful example of integrity? Any questions about this part? I also point out in the chapter that the images of Mary, as I mentioned last time, don't include bodiliness. They don't have a sensuous feeling. They don't have an erotic feeling. I mean, that is not a picture of an actual woman. And I also say that Mary does not have to appear as a mother only. And I use the example of pictures of the Holy Family. She's always looking at Jesus, never at her husband, Saint Joseph. So she's the mother, not the wife. So she loses her full humanity when she's depicted in that puritanical style that opposes the spiritual to the material. It's a denial of the incarnation, the moment at which the divine entered fully into the human. So it's just not really trusting that. Now, I use the example in your chapter, and I just want to mention this because it was so personally meaningful. There's a small town in Greece called Eleusis, Eleusis. It's 16 miles outside of Athens. So in the ancient myth, the great goddess mother, in the Greek perspective, is Demeter. She's the one who lets everything grow and produces the beautiful harvest so that all of us can live through the year. And she had a daughter named Persephone. This young virgin was abducted and raped by the god of the underworld, Hades, H-A-D-E-S. And this was done secretly so that Demeter, the mother, did not know where the daughter had gone. She just suddenly disappeared. She was picking flowers when she saw one with 100 petals that the god had placed there to trick her. When she picked the one with 100 petals, the earth opened up and she fell down into the underworld, the place associated with the dark side of the goddess. So she went into grief and she mourned the loss of her daughter. When she asked the other gods where she was, no one would tell her. She came to this little town of Eleusis and she sat by a well crying. When she was seen by a family who had a young son, and she was invited to join them and become what we would now call a nanny. And the little boy's name was Triptolemus, and she loved him very much and she took care of him. Eventually, she found out what happened to her daughter, and she asked Zeus to release her from the underworld. He said, well, the rule is that if she ate something down there, she can't leave. But if she didn't eat something, she can leave. So they went down into the underworld, and she said, no, I didn't eat anything, so I can go back to my mother. And then she was reminded, you ate 5 pomegranate seeds. So we won't consider it full eating, but you also can't leave her here permanently. So they made an arrangement that she would spend 6 months with her husband in the underworld and 6 months with her mother in the upper world. And Demeter said, okay, in the 6 months that she's with me, that will be spring and summer. I will let everything grow. In the 6 months when she's below the earth, I won't let anything grow. That will be fall and winter. So the people will have to save what they gain in their harvest to make it through the fall and winter. So that's the plan. Or another way of saying it is, the daughter was lost and dead to her mother, and then was allowed to come back to the world of the living. So it's a symbol of the dying and rising. And the earth itself reflects the story, because the earth too will die in the winter and rise in the spring. So the whole thing comes together and it explains why the planet is the way it is from a mythological point of view. Now, this story about Eleusis was so deeply meaningful to the people and became so closely associated with survival by living through fall and winter safely and trusting that there would be a spring and summer when you could gather food and save it. They set up what we would call a sacrament called the Eleusinian Mysteries. Mystery is another word for sacrament. And what you did was you went to Athens, and then you walked and you wore a special kind of tunic after purifying yourself in sacred spring. And then you walked the 16 miles to Eleusis, where the goddess had grieved, and you entered this sacred shrine, and you went through a series of ritual experiences, one of which was drinking something made from the mold on barley. And this gave you hallucinations. So you saw the goddess bringing her daughter back from the dead. And at the end of the experience, when you came back down from your hallucinogenic state, you knew for the rest of your life that death is not the end, but only part of an ongoing cycle. And every person who went through this felt the same way. It's called a mystery because you were not supposed to tell anybody about the experience, because that would reduce their power to experience it fully. And we only know about these mysteries because early Christians did tell the secret, and so that's how we know what most of what happens. So, the point I want to get to is that when I myself went to Greece, I went to this shrine. And believe me, there's very little left because it was mostly destroyed in the early centuries of Christianity. But while I was at the shrine, I turned and looked up the hill and I saw a little white chapel. And this chapel was on the grounds of the shrine. I thought, well, it's strange to have a Christian chapel here, and this is a pagan site. But I was curious, so I walked up the hill. I went into the little chapel. It was a Greek Orthodox chapel dedicated to the Virgin Mary, Virgin Mary of the Annunciation. In other words, it was honoring Mary when she was visited by the angel Gabriel. When I walked into the little chapel, I saw, excuse me, a booklet on the side settee there. And it was written in various languages, including English. So I read it, and this is what it said. It said, there's an ancient belief that before Mary could be visited by the angel Gabriel, she would have to go through the Eleusinian mysteries. So angels carried her when she was a teenage girl here to Greece, and she went through these mysteries with the goddess Demeter. And then she was brought back to Israel, and that's when the Annunciation could happen. I thought, this pulls the whole thing together, combining the pagan and the Christian, and placing Mary right there with the great Mother Goddess, and with the whole story of death and resurrection, which she herself would be part of. And the fact that they came up with this legend, obviously it's not what actually happens, but the fact that they thought that it was necessary for her to go through this pagan sacrament shows that somewhere in the human psyche is this realization that the divine feminine has no nationality. It's no longer Jewish or Greek. It's beyond any form of division or separation. It's totally unified with everything that anyone has ever known or appreciated about the divine feminine archetype. And it all came together when I saw that little booklet. And, you know, I smiled at the concept, but it made a deep impression on me. And I just saw how everything came together in such a beautiful way. And one final way in which I saw this was much more recently, just about a week ago. I had always known about, and I'm sure you do too, the labyrinth, which is on the floor of Chartres Cathedral. So everybody knows about that, and we have labyrinths here now also. And you can walk the labyrinthine path to the center, and you're coming to the center of your own wholeness. And I thought all these years that it's simply picture that shows a particular path that winds around and ends at the center. It never occurred to me that, but now I found out, that the original labyrinth, the one that's in Chartres Cathedral right now, the cathedral built in the 12th century, was showing the labyrinth from Greek mythology, in which the Minotaur, I'll explain these terms, was kept as a prisoner so he would not cause harm to the people. So King Minos and Queen Pasiphae had a daughter, and that's Ariadne. Then Pasiphae had a sexual connection to a bull, and she produced what's called a minotaur. Half, the bottom half is human, and the head is a head of a bull. with the two horns. And I found a beautiful picture on the internet of the mother holding the baby Minotaur, like a Madonna and child. Anyway, he turned out to be an evil kind of creature. So the king hired Daedalus, the famous architect, to build a labyrinth, put this Minotaur in the center of it, and do this labyrinth in such a way that he would never find his way out. So we're not going to kill him, because you can't kill off the evil, but you can keep yourself safe from it. So he built the labyrinth, put the Minotaur in the middle, and this Minotaur demanded as sacrifice 7 Athenian boys and 7 Athenian girls every 7 years to be brought into the labyrinth, and he would devour them. Until finally, Theseus, himself a teenager, decided that he would do battle with the labyrinth and end this evil action. He came into the labyrinth with the other boys and girls, and he killed the Minotaur. So that ended the reign of terror. And then, unable to get out of the labyrinth, he was helped by the Minotaur's half-sister, that is Ariadne. She showed him how to leave by following this golden thread that she had placed there so you could figure out how to come and go. So you have the female, the male action is not sufficient for the whole journey. You need the female assistance to help you come back into the world. So that's the story. Now, going back to the labyrinth in Chartres Cathedral. Originally, in the center was a bronze plate. On this bronze plate was engraved the image of Theseus killing the Minotaur, with Ariadne standing beside him, holding the thread, ready to help him leave. This was a Catholic cathedral. And the when I saw the movie documentary about this, the narrator said, The Ariadne represents Mary, to whom the whole cathedral is dedicated. So that's ultimately a picture of Mary. During the French Revolution, the revolutionaries removed the plate and melted it down, turned it into weapons. So it's now gone. All that's left are the studs, the nails that were holding it in. They're still there. Then I realized, this was actually the labyrinth from the ancient myth, placed right here in the cathedral, and the bishop must have thought, oh yes, it fits perfectly. He didn't say, oh, this is pagan, this can't be here. He must have said, oh yes, this fits right in. Yeah, let's definitely do this. So now when people walk the labyrinth, they're actually going into the dark underworld presided over by the divine feminine, who invites you to come in and then helps you get out. So that's a second example of the combination of ancient pagan myth and Christian faith. Because ultimately, faith is in the mysterious archetypal story that's imprinted on every human soul. It's not about some message that came from off planet that tells us what we're supposed to do. It's fully known, as Jung says, immemorially known by all humans. And every once in a while, somebody points you to it, and you feel right at home with it because it was in you from the beginning. So, I want to end with just this final quotation from our chapter. And this is a quotation from a woman, Jane Goodall. So I thought this would be a good way to wind up. And for next time, we're going to be reading chapter 3, Powers for Us and in Us. And Jane Goodall says this in her book, A Reason for Hope, Spiritual Journey. There are really only two ways, it seems to me, in which we can think about our existence here on earth. We either agree with Macbeth that life is nothing more than a tale told by an idiot, a purposeless emergence of life forms, including the clever, greedy, selfish, and unfortunate species that we call Homo sapiens. Or we can believe with Teilhard de Chardin, quote, there is something afoot in the universe, something that looks like gestation and birth. In other words, a plan, a purpose to it all. And the divine feminine has the thread that shows us how to get there. Thank you all.
We want to thank Dave for that wonderful explanation, and I just wanted to add there is a labyrinth right here in Santa Barbara at Trinity Church at Mitchell Terranean State. You can walk it. It's free. It's right there out in the open. So there is a one in Casa de Maria too. Thank you, Jackie. All right, thank you all, and we'll see you next Thursday.